Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. Today, we are joined by Dr. Michael Henderson, who is director of the Public Policy Research Lab at LSU, and we're going to talk about the Louisiana survey, which came out recently, that his institution does, I think, on a yearly basis. Dr. Henderson was born in Baton Rouge. He went to McKinley High School, college at LSU, where he got a double degree, believe it or not, a BA in political science and a BS in agriculture. Then he went to Harvard for a PhD in government. After that, he went to Oxford, Mississippi for 3 years as a faculty member at UMass, then came over to LSU. He is currently in the political communications specialist in the Mass Comm department, and he's also director of the Public Policy Research Lab. He's married, has two children. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're always happy to have you. So let's dive right in. You take a survey. Is that a yearly survey, Dr. Henderson?
It is. We do it every year since 2003. There have only been two exceptions in 2006 following Hurricane Katrina. This, of course, was before I got here. They'd actually went in the field twice the year after Katrina. And then last year, we were just entering the field when the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak began in the U.S., and we had to close our call center for quite a while. And so we actually did not do one last year.
I see. So last year. That makes a lot of sense. But typically you do one of these. So and in these surveys, you, you know, basically ask a lot of questions. You find out it's a survey that asks Louisianans how they feel about a number of different issue areas. Do these issue areas change year from year?
They do. We keep a core of the survey that we ask every year so we can track longitudinal data. And those are really just more general impressions about whether or not they think the state going in the right direction, wrong direction, evaluating various public services in the state. And then there's some fiscal items we ask every year. But we also try to rotate in batteries of current issues, topics that seem to be likely to show up in a legislative session or in the, we might hear in the media. And so we try to plug those in as well. And then, we do a kind of a combination of that with certain issues. Like for a number of years, we tracked attitudes on criminal justice reform. Although we did not have that in this year's survey, we've tracked attitudes on Medicaid expansion from before the expansion until now. Sort of key policy changes we try to follow for several years in a row.
Well, let's dive right in. Now, you did, I think, what, four or five different kind of major surveys this year. One of them I know focused on asked a question about, and I think this is a question that you use for longitudinal data. It says that 46% of the survey respondents said the state is heading in the wrong direction, while 42% say it's headed in the right direction. And I think what was interesting to me about this when I looked at these figures that you provided was that there's relatively little change in that. There were enormous changes in the last year with COVID, the contested election nationally, and certainly a lot of uproar, a lot of economic dislocation. So how do you square the relative stability of this figure, which is pretty similar to the year before, and, in the context of these enormous wrenching changes?
Yeah, that's really a great question. And you're spot on. If you go back and look over the last several years, these numbers really haven't shifted around that much. It's always within the margin of error. One might creep up a couple of points, one might creep down a couple of points, but they're both staying close to the mid-40s, really for the last 5 years or so. And with just one or two exceptions, you can take that actually goes all the way back to the early 20-teens as well. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of aggregate movement here. But I actually think a couple things are going on. I think part of that stability is actual stability among people, individual people, not just the state as a whole, but actual individuals are not changing their mind much on these attitudes, partly because a lot of this stuff is becoming baked in to how they see government generally and how they see politics generally, and it taps their partisanship or their general attitudes about government or about the state. And they're less responsive to current events. I think that's true for some people. It's not true for everybody. And other folks are changing a little bit. So these the stability in the aggregate actually masks a little bit of change if you start digging down into the numbers. And it turns out there is a little bit of change underneath this. Democrats, who are already generally more likely to say the state's heading in the right direction, at least under the Edwards administration, became more so over the last year. So that they rose by about 10 points. Republicans fell by about 15 points. And so those changes kind of offset and kept the overall number, when you put them all together, pretty close to where it was.
Right. So what you're telling me are a couple of things. One is that the survey's a little bit of a blunt interest instrument when you're considering it overall, because it probably there are changes among key demographics. Republicans think the state's going in a worse direction by 15%. Democrats, are up 10% as they like the state's governor. But then the other thing is that you're telling me, the first thing you said was that individuals, even though they're asked to reflect, is the state heading in the right direction, often think about how am I doing? And that's really standing in for how the state's doing. So if I'm doing pretty good, then everything's going fine. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not there. I think there's some of that, but it's not. But I think it actually has even more to do with their just general impression of how they feel about the state and the state's government and the state's politics, right? So if you're someone who generally is just, not a fan of, say, the Democratic administration, or not a fan of, Louisiana government and the things it does generally, then you're just more likely to say it's going in the wrong direction. And you're more likely to say that before COVID, and you're still likely to say that now. And vice versa for people who are more of a fan of the Edwards administration or Democrats, or more of a fan of the government doing more things. So I think it has a little bit more to do with that than with people's own, using their own personal sort of condition as a stand-in. Because we actually asked people about whether or not they thought the economy was getting better in the state, and we also asked them whether or not their own economic situation was better compared to a year ago. And we find that a good share of people in Louisiana, despite everything that's happened over the last year, say, yeah, I'm basically about the same as I was a year ago. But when we ask them, well, how about the state economy as a whole, you get a huge majority saying, well, it's just gone down the tank, that it's much worse than it was. So there is some disconnect between what people think is happening in the state and what's happening to themselves.
Yeah, and I have those figures. So 72% of Louisiana residents say the state's economy is worse than a year ago. But about 54% say, but my financial situation is about the same. I am wondering, Louisiana, about 46% say the state's heading in the right direction. How does that compare to other states? Are there states where everybody's happy? where like 80% of the people say, it's great. I love it here.
That's a great question. I'm not familiar with what state polling on questions like this in other states shows. But I would guess that you would only be likely to see those kinds of numbers if you have a very homogenous population, which probably means a small population in a small state. So, like, I bet if you pulled Wyoming or Vermont. Now, Wyoming, people who live in Wyoming and people who live in Vermont are very different from each other. But within those states, I wouldn't be surprised if you got a higher share of people saying that their state's heading in the right direction.
I wonder if we'd be, and are people in those states happier, and should we all be making plans to move? Vermont's a very liberal state, Wyoming quite a conservative state, so you could just pick your poison, so to speak, and move where you'd be happy. Of course, maybe happiness is partly about being in Louisiana as well.
Right.
Turning to your third report, which focused on taxes, it suggested that most Louisiana residents think the sales tax is too high, and that includes a majority of Democrats and 61% of Republicans as well. What does that indicate about sales tax reform in the current legislative session?
Well, I don't expect to see a lot on the sales tax in the current legislative session. Now, I mean, really the only modest to high profile or legislation on the sales tax so far has really been more about restructuring the process by which sales taxes are collected, rather than anything that has to do with sales tax rates or what kinds of goods and services have a sales tax applied to them and which ones don't. The focus on those kinds of issues has been a little bit more on the income tax and the business tax side. So even though there's a huge majority of people in Louisiana, or actually maybe not huge, but there's a majority of folks in Louisiana that say, you know, the sales tax is too high. And we've seen that number come up over the last several years. We really saw it spike after, you know, the sales tax was increased several years ago, and it stayed high since. I doubt that that's going to manifest in a legislative package that would reduce the sales tax rate. And as you know, that's partly because, you know, the legislature pays attention to more than just public opinion polling. And so, right, we have this potentially interesting coalition of folks who might be on the conservative side, who might just be more anti-tax generally, and then folks on the progressive side or the liberal side who might be anti-sales tax because it's, you know, more of a regressive tax. But if they were to come together and try to reduce the sales tax rate, you know, that would lower state revenue. That revenue would have to come from somewhere else if you want to continue to fund services. And the folks on the progressive side of that coalition, I don't think would want to cut those services. So unless there was some other revenue source to replace any reduction in the sales tax, I don't see how there would be much movement on this. And it doesn't look like they're looking to raise revenue this session. The big work that seems to be happening on the income tax side, and you know this as well as anyone, is focused on revenue neutral switches in terms of balancing off rate cuts with elimination of certain deductions and tax breaks. So if it's not gonna yield an increase in income tax revenue, then there's nothing to offset what would come if they drop the sales tax. So even though there is a majority of people that would say the sales tax is too high, I don't think there are enough legislators and folks in government convinced that, you know, that option is really on the table.
We are talking, in case you just tuned in, with Dr. Michael Henderson of the Louisiana, the LSU Public Policy Center. He's the director there and does the Louisiana survey, which comes out and tells us lots of interesting things about how Louisiana residents feel. I noticed that about 52% of Louisiana residents say they pay about the right amount in taxes. 41% say they're paying too much. How does this relate to the group that pays the most and those paying the least?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it does vary by household income. That you're going to find, actually, it's going to be the folks in the sort of the middle 50% of household incomes in the week, so roughly from the 25th percentile to the 75th percentile household incomes, are the folks that are more likely to say that they're paying more than their fair share. It's the folks at the lower end of the household income distribution and folks at the higher end of the household income distribution that are less likely to say that they're paying more than their fair share. But it's interesting because we also ask people not just about their own tax burden. We also ask them to say if they thought different groups were paying more or less than their fair share or the right amount. So we ask people about low-income households, if they thought low-income households are paying more than their fair share or less or about the right amount, middle-income households and upper-income households. And you do see this interesting thing where lower income households, if you look at what people actually, their actual household earnings, lower income folks in lower income households are more likely to say that when you ask about lower income households, they're more likely to say that lower income households are paying more than their fair share. But when you ask them about their own taxes, they're less likely to say they're paying their fair share, which is a little bit odd, right? Because it's almost asking them about themselves twice. But you get two different answers. So my guess there is that a lot of lower income folks think of themselves as middle class. And we've actually seen stuff like that before, looking at the other end of the income distribution, where a lot of upper income folks think of themselves as middle class. So I think that's probably what's going on here, too.
So they're squeezing. So and that's common all over America for as long as we've been doing polls, which is people tend to put themselves in the middle class, even by strict economic measures, they are in fact working class or poor or actually pretty affluent. So middle class seems to go up and embrace people who have quite a bit of money as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The public, I noticed that about 50% of people in your poll say that the upper income people pay less than their fair share. Is there kind of a sentiment about people getting away with something there?
I mean, it does look like there's this trace of this sort of old school Louisiana economic populism here, where there are people who are more likely to say that upper income folks are paying less than their fair share, and also to say that large businesses, not small businesses, but large businesses are paying less than their fair share. So there does seem to be this sort of strain of economic populism out there, where some folks are thinking that, you know, someone's getting away. But again, just as you mentioned, you know, most people think of themselves as middle class, and not in this year's poll, but a few years ago, we actually asked people to define what they thought of as upper income when we asked them questions like this. And in almost every case, no matter how much somebody made, they thought it was the guy that makes a little bit more than them was upper income. So upper income folks might sometimes complain about other upper income folks not paying their fair share, but they're not talking. So someone who's making $125,000 a year says, you know, rich folks aren't paying their fair share of taxes. They're not talking about themselves. They're talking about the guy that makes $175,000 a year. You talk to that guy, he'll say, oh no, rich people don't pay their fair share, but he ain't talking about himself. He's talking about the guy that makes $225,000 a year. So they're always kind of like pushing it up. So, you know, that then makes the politics of this hard. People as a whole might say, yes, the rich are getting away with something. But once you start trying to talk about who different people think are rich, you get to a pretty small slice pretty quickly.
Yeah, I wonder, how rich do you have to be to actually say at the end of the day, yeah, you're right, I'm really rich?
Yeah, so we did that about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was not until we got up to about $200,000 in household earnings before most people in that income group described themselves as being rich, or using the phrase of upper class, that kind of stuff.
Upper income. Yeah.
So you had to be pretty high. You had to be pretty high up, and $200,000. That's pretty high up in the state's distribution of household incomes. Not a lot of folks are making $200,000 or more in this state. So you're really getting up into like that top 10% zone before people are saying that, hey, yeah, I would consider myself rich.
I think the median income, household income in Louisiana is $49,000 or something like that. I don't know.
Yep, right about there.
Yeah, that's the figure that comes to mind. So your survey revealed that the public has little appetite for budget cuts or tax increases. So the public doesn't want to cut budget cuts in elementary or secondary education, higher education, healthcare, roads, bridges, you know, incarceration, welfare, or other things. But they also don't have any appetite for tax increases. So I guess my question is, what's the legislature to do?
Right. This is a perennial challenge. We often find this pattern of, no, we don't want to give up any stuff. We don't want to give up any services. We don't want the spending cuts. But no, we don't want to pay more taxes. We don't have to pay for it. And sometimes a lot of folks, including folks in, you know, who do public opinion research and study public opinion, will almost in a sort of a laughing way talk about like the something for nothing syndrome, that there's these folks that, you know, are, you know, I don't want to have to pay, but I want the stuff. And you do see that when you look at the, you know, the result, the overall result in the aggregate. But when you break it down and actually force people to make the trade-off, oh, look, you said you want to spend money on K-12 education. Okay, well, were you willing to pay higher taxes for that? And then they have to make the trade-off of, do they want the spending, or do they want to, or would they be willing to pay the taxes, or do they want to cut the spending? It turns out that you really cut down to, it's still a significant size, but it's not everybody. It's about 30%. About a third of people are those ones that are really the something for nothing folks who are really saying, I want the stuff, but I don't want to pay. So it's not the case that, you know, all of us as a whole are trying to have it both ways, like, you know, a kid, you know, this sort of childish mentality of give me the cookies, but don't make me have to do the chores to get them. It's really just about a third of Louisianans kind of fall into that category, which means what the legislature has to do is they have to decide what their priorities are. You know, which constituents are they going to, or do they want to listen to? Which constituents who say, yes, I'm willing to pay taxes, but for these kinds of services, versus other folks who say, no, I don't want to pay the more taxes. I want to cut those services, or I want to pay more taxes for these other services. So it doesn't give a whole lot of wiggle room there, but there's certainly room to make choices about what to invest in. But there's also exceptions, too, and I just want to point out that we do find, really the only exception this year is K-12 education, where we find that people really are saying, yes, we want more spending, and yes, we're willing to pay taxes for that. So they do have an out when it comes to K-12 spending, where we don't fall into this sort of anti-tax but pro-spending sort of paradox.
Interesting. I happen now, of course, I'm in higher education, as you are, and I found something in your survey interesting. It said support for more government spending on higher education and support for raising state taxes to fund higher education both fell significantly since 2018 by 12 and 13 percentage points, respectively. What's going on there? Are people hating on higher education?
Yeah, they seem to be. And I mean, that sort of jumped off the page to me as well when I saw these results, because of the six or so spending areas that we ask about and ask about every few years. 2018 was the last time we asked about it. We were planning to last year, but as I mentioned, we had to suspend last year's survey because of the pandemic. So it's been 3 years. It's the only one of those six where we see declines, both in terms of spending preferences and taxing preferences, our attitudes about taxing, in double digits that exceed the margin of error in double digits for both, which tells me something particular is going on with higher ed. This is not just an overall rejection of government spending or rejection of taxes. There may be some of that going on, but this is particularly targeted at higher education. So why might that be the case? We don't have a good answer to that, but I mean, if we're going to enter the realm of speculation, I think we've seen higher education in the last few years become politicized, where it's increasingly criticized, in the public sphere based on politics. And so this could be kind of a reaction to that, where folks feel like, you know, higher education is too liberal or whatever, then maybe they're more likely to be like, no, I don't want to spend any more money there. I suspect it might have more to do with that than anything. I mean, obviously, higher education in Louisiana, particularly Louisiana State University, has taken a well-deserved hit in the public mind over the last few months as, you know, particular scandals and problems have been revealed. But our survey was in the field before really a lot of that stuff broke. So I think that's less about recent news related to LSU and more probably about a general attitude towards higher education in America and in Louisiana.
Well, that would be really, really depressing if the scandals revolving the LSU football program and Title IX in fact resulted in less support generally for higher education, given that those aren't academic areas, so to speak. But I think you're quite right, and that's my analysis, too, is, I continually read columns where professors are called Marxists who are indoctrinating their students, and, campuses are woke ferment things where conservatives have difficulty speaking. I, of course, teach on a Louisiana campus, as you do, I imagine, and I have trouble connecting that to the reality that exists here, where students don't seem to know what their professors think politically, one way or the other.
Yeah, no, that's true. I agree. That's my experience as well. We both teach topics directly related to politics, so of course politics are going to come up in our classes. But like I often have my students do a survey about the class, separate from general course evaluations, and I ask them to rate where they think I stand. And it's not where I would rate myself, and it's certainly not. They're not saying I'm some left wing guy. So I don't think my students are perceiving their experience as some sort of like indoctrination of some liberal agenda or whatnot. But we're seeing that criticism in the public sphere, whether it's accurate or not. We're seeing that criticism out there, and we're seeing national polling showing that people, particularly more conservative people, are increasingly critical of higher education generally and increasingly thinking of colleges and college professors as being liberal. And there may be some truth to that among the actual political leanings of college professors. I don't know. But that attitude is being translated into I believe these people are liberal, and therefore I believe they're indoctrinating our children. But again, that's not what it seems to be happening to me, in my experiences at the university. But that criticism, that story is out there, and I think it's starting to permeate more and more into the public mind.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I could just point out that, you know, I think there's six colleges at UL, and the colleges of nursing and education and engineering and the sciences. And I'm quite sure how you do a political take on biology, for example. But my guess is that what those professors think, you know, in their private area on terms of their politics, never is ever mentioned in a classroom. So I think painting with too broad a brush is dangerous in this regard.
Yes, I think that's right.
One of the rare areas of agreement was in the area of spending for child care. This was Report 3. You said, you concluded, the majority of Louisiana residents support more support for early childhood education. Can you tell us about what you found out here?
Yeah, so this was one we've heard a lot of talk about and buzz about early childhood education in Louisiana the last few years. It's something that we've seen increasingly folks on different sides of the aisle. We've seen sort of pro-business Republicans and sort of progressive Democrats in the state, at least among like legislators and activists, sort of talking more about we need to invest in this. And so we wanted to see what public support for this was. We wanted to see if it varied based on like the age of children, because we're really talking about early childhood education for this is before pre-K. And so we wanted to see if people thought this was a good idea for 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds, or, you know, but also for, you know, toddlers, kids even younger than that. And then to see like if they supported a universal program where every family's kids could be eligible, or was it more support for a means tested program. And then we also wanted to just kind of, we weren't sure that people even knew what that phrase early childhood education might mean, that maybe it just means childcare to some people, which is not really what folks have been advocating for, although some folks obviously have been advocating for expanding to childcare as well, particularly after the pandemic. And so we kind of threw in two versions to see what people thought about childcare, what they thought about early childhood education. We found that none of those dimensions really made a difference. There was pretty widespread support, usually in the 70s, for more spending on this. And even if you invoke taxes and say, okay, but we got to pay for it, you still get majority support. It drops to the 50s, but you still get majority support for increasing taxes to fund these kinds of programs. So this is a very popular idea, broad support both among Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where the public is not trying to have its cake and eat it too by saying, yeah, I support more support for that group, but I don't want to pay more taxes. But in this case, they're in fact saying, yeah, okay, I'll pay more taxes.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, we are essentially coming to the end of our program. We've got about 30 seconds left. I am thinking we're not going to get a chance to talk about your survey that you did specifically about race and class. But I'm wondering, is the survey planning, and just a few seconds left, is the survey planning on focusing on this issue in the upcoming year, given the Floyd trial and everything that's going on?
I think so. I mean, this has been something we've wanted to do more of in the survey recently, and we've kind of got a little bit at it from time to time. We did devote a lot of space in the survey on it this year. I suspect there will be a lot of interest in bringing this back and keeping it in the survey for quite a while.
I bet. And maybe we'll have you back and talk specifically about that issue. Let me let you know, listeners, we have been talking this morning with Dr. Michael Henderson, who is, of course, director of the Public Policy Research Lab at the LSU. Thanks so much for being on the show this morning, Dr. Henderson.
Thank you. It's a delight.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Get in the groove and funkify your life. 1 p.m. on Thursday and Friday night at 9.
Funding for KRVS provided by Rouse's Markets, which supports our regional food systems by buying from local farmers, fishermen, and manufacturers. More information on Rouse's can be found at www.rouses.com.
Best place to stay irate every Sunday night for decades now is tuning into Jamon here on KRVS. Daddy Cecil with ya. 2 hours of classic Rasta reggae, Sunday nights 9 to 11, Saturday mornings 1 to 3, here on 88.7 KRVS.
Listen to music from the land of the rising sun with Japan Jukebox, Monday at 11 p.m. and Saturday at 3 a.m., only on KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.